Hello and welcome to revisionmedia.org. I'm Paul Stevenson. I will be with you here for the next hour here. And that is through till 11 p.m. in the UK where I am. Through till 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I think through till about 2 p.m. Pacific time, wherever you are. I imagine most of you will be in the United States. But wherever you are around the world, it's the beauty of internet radio, isn't it? Of course, that we can reach all corners of the globe. Or if you're a flat earther, don't take offense to the globe comment. anywhere on the flat earth as well. Anyway, maybe you guys in the US have got other things to worry about, but over here you may have heard of a little thing called Brexit, and it's kind of reaching a climax now. Well, we hope it's reaching the climax in some way or another. I mean, if you're someone who voted in the referendum in 2016. Yeah, that's right, 2016. We're still discussing trying to rid ourselves from the tentacles of power of the European Union 3.5 years on. That'll give you an indication of just how these kind of super state organizations feel when you try to leave them. They're not going to let go of that power and that control very easily. And we've seen that to its maximum level in the last 3 years, with the establishment doing everything it possibly can to stop Brexit, to confuse it, to drag it out, and essentially to make it a stamina race, a battle of stamina, because a lot of people are sick and tired of it now. And we've had a new deal today, but it's not really a new deal, but Boris Johnson has negotiated the latest deal with the EU with some improvements to Theresa May's deal, which wouldn't be hard because it was, as Farage says, it was the worst deal in history. Nigel Farage has described this deal by Boris Johnson as the second worst deal in history. Anyway, I'll try and set the stage for you a little bit. This is from Jacob Rees-Mogg today. He's part of the Conservative government and previously was leader of the European Research Group, which is an organization which was very much committed to leaving the EU, and that sort of held Theresa May's feet to the fire when it came to her negotiations with the EU, was responsible for voting against her deal, but then everyone in Parliament did for their own different reasons anyway. And this deal that Boris Johnson has put forward is not much, as far as I understand it, much better than Theresa May's deal. Although it's only come out this morning and I don't actually know the full details of it. All I know is from my experience of people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nigel Farage and Corbyn and the usual players, their reaction to it, from what I can extrapolate, it doesn't sound like it's a hugely different from the Theresa May deal, and with slight improvements if you're someone who wants to leave the EU. But again, that wouldn't be hard because their deal was so terrible. But I haven't actually... I haven't had time, and most people in the country haven't had time to look through it. And the last was 585 pages. So, and then they're going to be discussing this and voting on it in Parliament on Saturday. So we're largely, the public are not going to really know what this is going to involve. But we're running out of options, because Jean-Claude Juncker said there's not going to be an extension. No more extensions. How much weight you can put on that is debatable. If it's in his interest to extend it again, he will, I'm sure, or he'll be open to that. The other option is, of course, if this deal doesn't get voted through Parliament, which I suspect it won't be, is a no deal, which the ban bill, or the controversially known the bill that caused so much of a controversy in Parliament a couple of weeks back, because Johnson called it the surrender bill, because it basically means that the EU know that we're not prepared to walk away. So that gives them more bargaining power and it puts them in a stronger position, which is why it was correctly referred to as a surrender bill. So there's been legislation brought in, the ban stroke surrender bill, to stop us leaving on a no deal. And therefore, if we don't get a deal through, if this deal or some other deal doesn't get through Parliament, then that they would extend it again. If that's not going to be the case, and let's assume that Jean-Claude Juncker is correct, and he's going to, and we can believe him for a second, that only leaves two other options. That is, you leave with no deal somehow, that the government gets around the legislation, the Ben Act or the Ben Bill, or they outright revoke Article 50, which was the legal legislation that was the legal basis for leaving the EU, which is Article 50, which Parliament voted through. If that is outrightly revoked, then we stay in the EU. That would be extremely bold, to put it mildly, and controversial. No deal would be extremely controversial for particularly those in the Remainers who don't want to leave the EU. That's why they legislated against it. And yet, this deal so far, we've had Jeremy Corbyn come out against it. We've had Nigel Farage, who's not just a commentator on radio now. He is the leader of the Brexit Party, which is influential, saying it's the second worst deal in history. And again, I haven't read it. I haven't had time to, you know, it hasn't filtered down yet. I haven't had time to sort of filter down to know exactly how different it is from Theresa May's deal. I only know that what Farage and other people have been reacting to it. The DUP don't like it because while they've taken out the backstop, which means it would keep the whole of the UK in the customs union, which means we can't make trade deals with other countries and our own trade deals. We have to be, you know, part of the EU for that. While it removes the backstop for the rest of the UK, it does not remove the backstop for the Northern Ireland, which would mean that there's a border essentially down the Irish Sea when it comes to trading. So you'd have Northern Ireland would be in the customs union aligned with the EU, but the rest of the UK wouldn't be. Scotland then would be unhappy because they would see this as a good thing that they would want, and they would be angry that Northern Ireland have received this and essentially in a major part of being part of the EU, they stay in it, in Northern Ireland. And yet the unionists in Northern Ireland, as the name would suggest, are committed to the union. So, I mean, the whole thing's a mess. I mean, it's just one of those things where it can't please everybody. But at the same time, you know, we did vote to leave the EU, and it shouldn't be a case of pleasing everybody. It should be a case of honouring the EU or the referendum we had in 2016. And I just don't think anybody's happy with this deal. It's the same. It's not much different from Theresa May's deal. You know, for those who wanted to remain in the EU, it was too much like leaving the EU. For those who wanted to stay in the EU, or sorry, for those who wanted to leave the EU, it was too much like staying in the EU. So, I mean, I just don't know what's going to happen here. Unless miraculously they can get this voted through Parliament, what's going to happen? Are they going to revoke Article 50? Are we going to actually leave with a no deal, which would be huge? Everything is just controversial. I mean, talk about British politics being in a state of just complete and utter chaos. And as much as the Remainers like to say it's as a result of Brexit, largely it's not as a result of Brexit. It's as a result of the attempts by the establishment to outright refuse to honour the result of that referendum when, after all said and done. Now, the Remainers, of course, have some arguments that there will be some transient pain, but nothing like, from what I understand, nothing like the kind of, you know, doomsday prophetic, you know, eschatology that they've been prophesying. It's just not going to be as bad as all that, where we're going to have, you know, we have shortage of medicines and everything else. And we have 39 billion that we're given the EU immediately, that if we left on a no deal situation, we would keep that money, which would soften the blow and break the fall of any, you know, transient discomfort that particularly mid or small businesses would experience. So, I mean, it's a mess, quite frankly. And this deal doesn't do anything to help it. I mean, it's just literally a mess. And I don't see how this is going to get sorted out. Nobody else can. As I say, not all of the Remainer arguments are bad. There is going to be some discomfort. But, you know, if you're going to leave an organization and all its tentacles like the EU, it's going to take a little while to establish, you know, comfortable independence. But it's nowhere near as bad as what people are making out. And we would keep 39 billion. And, you know, we would manage it. You know, worse things have happened than, or could happen than leaving the EU. But no one's going to vote for this deal if any, if today's initial reaction is anything to go by. Here's Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Mr. Speaker, it's being so cheerful that keeps the Honourable Gentleman going. It's always a pleasure to listen to him. He mentions the deal. I am pleased to say that this is a really fantastic and exciting deal. I am very glad he's given me the opportunity to speak about it, because when I was speaking on behalf of the government on Sunday, I was doing so because I trust the Prime Minister and knew he would get a good deal. But I was supporting it on the basis of trust. Now I know what is in the deal. My trust has been completely justified. It is a really exciting and positive deal. It removes the undemocratic backstop. It is a huge advance for the whole of the United Kingdom. It will ensure that we are one single customs territory. I'm aware of the details of the deal. But I actually have the text of it here.
Okay, well, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg, as I say, he's been someone who's been, you know, quite a source of comfort if you're someone who wants to leave the EU. But immediately, it seems to me problematical where you've got a split here between Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is someone that we've looked to as a source of stability and a source of strength and fortitude in the Leave camp, liking this deal, and Farage. Nigel Farage, who we can trust even more as someone who wants to leave the EU, is saying this just, I mean, this is slightly better than Theresa May's original deal, but a really bad deal. So this is what's going to happen now in the country, where even those who want to leave are going to start to split on whether this deal is, maybe we should just take it and accept it's the best we can get and get on with this, because people are sick and tired of Brexit. Or do we dig in and say no? I mean, let's try and leave without a deal and just on WTO terms, if that was even possible, if there was some route to that. But certainly today I noticed that in phone-ins to Farage's show that Farage is receiving some flack, you know, simply now, because it's like people are fatigued by it and they don't want, they just want to get on with it. They don't want anyone, the Farage or anyone else, saying, no, it's not a proper deal. In other words, we just continue dragging this on and on. People just want to, you know, get on with it now. And the temptation is to say, listen, it's probably the best we're going to get. It's better than Theresa May's deal, but of course that wouldn't be difficult. And I sympathize with both camps now. I'm sick of it. Everyone's sick of it.
The Honourable Gentleman says from a sedentary position, I haven't read it. How do you peruse something without reading it? Does he think I have understood?
And I will say that is, you know, that's everybody. That's my position. And that's everybody's position in the country at the minute, largely, until this filters down. It's difficult to comment on what this, on what, whether this deal is a good deal or not. I mean, it's like, if Farage says it's a bad deal, it's probably bad if you're a Brexiteer and you want to leave. But in terms of actually being responsible and making your own decisions, then it's almost impossible until we get the details of this. And yet this is going to be voted through in Parliament or not on Saturday. So it's difficult to know how, you know, how the rest of us are actually supposed to digest before Saturday the exact detail and what this deal is proposing, apart from listening to other commentators. Anyway, I still don't think it's going to get through. I mean, no one has been positive about it apart from the government themselves, which you'd expect. But Jeremy Corbyn has condemned it. Farage has condemned it. The DUP don't want it. The Scottish Nationalists don't want it. I mean, it's just more deadlock. It's just a complete impasse.
Sensory perception, I tell him, he is wrong. It has not come to me through the ether. I have looked at the words on the page, which in the normal definition is reading, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps we should have, after this session, remedial education for people to understand the normal use of words in... So, It is a really good, exciting deal that takes out the undemocratic backstop, delivers on what the Prime Minister promised he would do. In 85 days, it's achieved something that could not be achieved in 3 years. It is something... Well, I'm thanking him for giving me credit for it, Mr. Speaker, but the credit belongs to my right honourable friend, who has achieved this remarkable success in a deal that all of us can support. Every single member who stood on a manifesto saying that they would respect the government, the will of the people in the referendum, can support this with confidence. All our socialist friends can support it with confidence because it delivers on the referendum result. It is a really exciting day today in British politics. All the Eurosceptics, all my friends who...
Well, I'm afraid from what I've heard so far, Jacob, I beg to differ because no one's sharing your enthusiasm outside of the government, including, you know, people who voted to leave. If far right is anything to go by, it's not really, you know, leaving the way we voted to leave. And Corbyn, the Scottish Nationalists, the DUP, it basically separates Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK in terms of trade. It would keep them in the customs union. And the unionists are not happy about that. Immediately, within about 10 minutes of the deal, they said they wouldn't vote for it. At the very least, the Conservatives can come out of this appearing at least that they were serious about leaving the EU, that they got some concessions from the EU, that they tried. If it's not voted through in Parliament, they can't be blamed when it comes to a general election. In the best case scenario, there's a master plan going on here from the Conservatives, knowing that this deal will get voted down, won't pass Parliament, and that they are somehow going to dodge the surrender or the Benn Bill, controversially known as the Surrender Bill, which stops us leaving with a no deal. If they can somehow get around that, if there's some loophole there, if there's something they know that no one else knows, then they may be able to take us out with a no deal. But I don't think that the government actually want to leave without a deal. So it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out. I mean, it just seems like, you know, despite what Jacob Rees-Mogg's saying here, absolutely nothing has changed of any real significance in terms of this, you know, bringing some sort of resolution to it, because all the major players in British politics are saying they don't like it.
Where I used to sit can rally round this great deal, and I hope that my I hope my friends in the DUP will also find that what it does for the whole of the United Kingdom is something over which they can have comfort and support. And I understand that our separatist friends don't want anything for the benefit of the whole of the United Kingdom. They're always trying to pick things apart, but they will be shown to be wrong. The Honourable Gentleman asked me if I would at any point have to eat my words. Well, I must say this deal is the Tornado's Rossini of a deal. It is a deal that one can eat with joy and pleasure, and it is the finest culinary delight for me to have. And I apologise to the Honourable Gentleman. I didn't pay unduly close attention to the SNP conference, having other things to do. Of slightly more interest, but I mean, it has to be said, almost anything would have been of slightly more interest. But I noticed that the Honourable Gentleman was very pleased to be here early in the week to avoid his leader's speech when he had the opportunity to be in the House of Commons instead. But on the difference between Scotland and Northern Ireland, the difference is absolutely clear. And that is the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement, and the fact that there is a land border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, which is the land border with the European Union. So Northern Ireland is unquestionably in a unique position, hence its difference.
And that may be true, and that is true, but the Scottish Nationalists, Scotland wanted to stay in the EU, and they're looking across Northern Ireland, and they see Northern Ireland's situation as unfair to them. They're like, well, if Northern Ireland can stay in the customs union, being aligned with the EU, why can't we? Which is a problem, and which is Nicola Sturgeon, the first minister in Scotland, has already voiced. I haven't read it. We haven't had enough time for it to filter down and get some information on it. But I mean, it's fascinating how it's going to play out. But I mean, all I can think of is, despite the fact that it seems to please nobody, and that everyone so far has come out and said no to it, that it'll somehow get voted through Parliament, because in a general election, the electorate are going to express their wrath at the politicians for not voting for this deal, or voting for something. And it's just, people are sick of it, and that they somehow get this through Parliament, because the alternatives are another extension, revoking Article 50, or leaving without a deal. And the whole establishment is against that. Here's a guy I was listening to this earlier. Jeff Taylor, he I don't know who he is. He's a guy on YouTube, but he stays up to date on Brexit a lot. And so I usually go to him to find, he does about 3 or 4 videos a day on this. So he is good for keeping up to date. Jeff Taylor is his name.
Hello there. Just as the Brexit deal is agreed between the EU and the UK Prime Minister, out comes the news that makes the Benn Surrender Act totally irrelevant. The text of the new deal struck between the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the EU27 has been published, and it's even longer than the last one. The document that contains the revised text of the withdrawal agreement that Theresa May agreed runs to 64 pages and adds reams of detail into what rules will apply to Northern Ireland only after Brexit. I've had a skim through it, but I haven't had time to compare it to the original yet, so I'm in no position to say what I think of it. Except that, being me, I just think that if different rules apply to a part of our country after we've left, then the question is, have we really achieved a full and proper Brexit?
In other words, for those of you who are unfamiliar with this whole situation, if Northern Ireland is part of the UK, this is why the Unionist Party in Northern Ireland are happy with it and said immediately they won't vote for it, because they are, as the name suggests, their whole raison d'etre is to be part of the UK, to be part of the Union. And the opposite side in Northern Ireland, I came from Northern Ireland, is what all the fighting was about. You have the Irish nationalists who want to remain part of the EU. And like Scotland, Northern Ireland, when you break it down in terms of each little country, Northern Ireland voted to remain. But as a whole of the UK, the overall vote meant that we all wanted to leave the EU, or that the Leavers won the result of the referendum. But in Scotland and Northern Ireland, you had the majority of people wanted to remain in the EU. So if we have a situation where Northern Ireland remains in the EU, then you have a compromised union for those in the UK who are unionists, which the Conservatives are, and they're propped up by the unionist vote in Northern Ireland. This is a threat to the union, and of course the unionists are not happy with it. And as I said, they'll vote it down immediately. The other side of that is that Scotland, who voted to remain in the EU, will want the same arrangement as Northern Ireland potentially. They would like to stay in the customs union as well. So they're not happy either. And again, I don't mean to repeat myself, but I just don't see how this whole square and debacle can be circled where everyone is kept happy. I mean, the United Kingdom is not very united.
And no one seems to be talking much about the £39 billion so-called Brexit divorce payment either. Now, most Remainer MPs will have been planning to force Boris Johnson to get an Article 50 extension via the Benn Surrender Act before getting an amendment to the vote on the deal itself on Saturday or an amendment to the Queen's speech for the Boris Johnson Brexit deal to be put to a confirmatory referendum against remaining in the European Union. But they should have listened to Michael Gove when he appeared on the BBC Two Politics Live show today. And when asked what he would do if MPs voted for a second referendum, he said quite clearly and categorically that they won't be voting for a second referendum. In fact, he said it twice. Many may have just dismissed that, but up hops Jean-Claude Juncker this afternoon saying...
Yeah, well, you know, many... probably have dismissed it, and rightly so, because I mean you can't believe a word that the majority of these politicians say, sadly, because there has been talk about a second referendum, and now he's going to go on and say about Jean-Claude Juncker has said that there's going to be no more referendums or no more extensions. But again, how much weight can you put behind that if it's in his interest in the end to have an extension or to have a second referendum? I mean, of course Jean-Claude Juncker is going to be up for that. I mean, these guys saying things, it doesn't really mean a lot, really.
That there will be no further Article 50 extensions. That's it. So no time for referendums and the like. So twice surprised. No one thought Boris could get rid of the Irish border backstop, and no one thought Boris could get Juncker to rule out further Brexit extensions. But I still see Remainer MPs on the telly talking about second EU referendums, etc. But as we will have left the EU on the 31st of October, deal or no deal, then if in the most remote possibility any future EU referendum was held, it would, I think, be the first ever rejoin the EU vote. Because anyone still hankering after EU membership from the 1st of November onwards would no longer be a Remainer, but a rejoiner. Best they dig out the Lisbon Treaty Article 49 text. So now we've got rid of the Article 50 extension route and therefore the Benn Surrender Act has been neutered, there are only three options left. Agree the deal and hope...
Okay, I'm mindful that if you're listening in the US, you might not be familiar with some of this terminology. Article 50 was what was legally voted in by Parliament, which meant it triggered the process of us leaving the EU legally after the result of the referendum, which Parliament voted for, and then have done everything else since to frustrate, thwart, complicate, confuse, and hypocritically attempt to stop Brexit by making it so soft that it'll be unrecognisable as a Brexit at all, like Theresa May's deal, which is why Farage called it the worst deal in history. All the while saying, we honour the result of the referendum, but... The 31st of March came, and then they had an extension. And the Benn Bill was brought in to legislate against the no-deal Brexit. In other words, if the Parliament cannot vote on a deal, then those of us who voted to leave the EU, if we can't get a decent deal with the EU, remembering we didn't vote for a deal, we voted to leave the EU, then we will leave without a deal. This is called a no-deal Brexit, as they term it, or as most of us would just call leaving the EU. It just means we haven't got a deal with the EU. Of course, we would like to get a good deal, but that hasn't seemed possible, particularly with the, in quotes, negotiating positions of Theresa May, offering them $39 billion straight off the bat for leaving the club, which is what he was saying. And as I said, despite all this fear-mongering about no-deal Brexit, which has been off the chart, the sort of language would normally be reserved for, you know, eschatological doomsday prophecy. But alas, you know, millions up and down this country, the sheeple have bought into it as usual. And, you know, they think that this is going to be the worst thing that could ever happen to the EU or to the country, that we leave without a deal. Would there be some difficulties? Of course. But the $39 billion would certainly soften the blow and break the fall of any transient economic trauma that particularly small and mid-sized businesses would experience. To leave the tentacles of control and power of the EU and how much they do influence our activities here politically and culturally and everything else here in the UK, it's going to be difficult overnight to just completely adapt to that. But we know that. We know that when we voted to leave the EU, that there might be some discomfort at first, but we'll deal with it. We'll work it out. So they've really, you know, ramped up this rhetoric and narrative of literally that there's going to be food shortages, medicine shortages, everything that they could possibly think of. The usual suspects and big business department and the media have been pushing this, of course. So the Benn Bill was brought into legislation to stop a no deal happening. That's how paranoid those in our parliament are about a no deal, which is essentially us leaving the EU. So that was their big priority, to stop that. What Geoff Taylor is saying here is that if Jean-Claude Juncker in the EU has ruled out any extensions, then that kind of makes null and void the Benn Bill anyway, because it means that we're going to have a deal, or that they're going to have to revoke Article 50, or that we leave with no deal, because the Benn Bill was designed that if we can't vote through a deal, that and by stopping a no deal, that we would get an extension. There would be an extension to Article 50, and on the show goes. Delay, dither, and just a continuation of a process that people up and down the country, Remain and the Leaver alike, are sick of. So apparently, I don't know. I mean, is Jean-Claude Juncker saying that he's ruled out extensions mean that there's going to be no extensions? I don't think so. But anyway, it leaves the options as Geoff will outline here.
To get the legislation through on time, no deal Brexit, or enough MPs get together to force through an act of parliament to unilaterally revoke the Article 50 letter and so keep us in the EU. Now, I know that if there was a secret vote on revoking the Article 50 letter, it would sail through as the favoured option amongst MPs. But thankfully, our MPs' votes are public, so as to make them accountable to us, the electorate. So I don't think there really is too much of a risk of that happening. And if they wanted to do that, they'd have to start right now. So it's now that deal or no deal question. And once Juncker's statement about no more extensions sinks in with the Remainer MPs, then that will really concentrate their minds between deal and no deal. And this may be where we see Remainers vote for the deal and Brexiteers vote for no deal. Now, the DUP are very unhappy with the deal and have put out a statement to that effect, so probably votes for no deal from them. And because of their unique position in this, it may drag others along that path. And the Eurosceptic Bruges group that was founded by Margaret Thatcher has emphatically opposed the deal, saying, "This agreement provides for a different status for Northern Ireland and therefore has the potential to lead to the breakup of the whole of the United Kingdom. The UK must leave the European Union as one entity." And Nigel Farage, the leader of the Brexit Party, has called Boris's efforts the second worst deal in history. The worst deal obviously being Theresa May's original withdrawal agreement surrender treaty. Now, at this early stage, straight after that Juncker intervention, it's probably too early to tell how the vote will go. But what do you think? Please share and comment, and thank you for watching.
So that's Geoff Taylor. You know, so in other words, no one's happy. It's just the impasse continues. I mean, it's almost comical. I mean, it's just, you know, the Parliament and the establishment have done everything they can to stop Brexit happening. But, you know, when you actually look at it as well, there is some credence to some of the arguments that Remainers make. I mean, they're as undemocratic as you like. Make no mistake about it. Their main goal for all of this, even their reasonable arguments, are to stop Brexit. But in reality, this is a situation where it's the complexities of it are just, they seem endless. I mean, I just don't know in reality how you get everyone on the same page to vote through a deal here. It's fascinating to speculate about it. If anybody's listening and they've got some ideas as to what they think will happen, I'm all ears. So, you know, by all means do call in, but I just don't think anybody really knows, except maybe those at Westminster who are negotiating things behind the scenes at this stage. They've got some plans that we don't know about. But so far, we've had everybody, all the major players have come out and said that they'll vote against it. So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Graham will be on after me later on. I'll be interested to see what he thinks about it. If he's been following Brexit, what he thinks is going to happen. I don't mean to be repetitive because I was on my previous show on Revolution Radio before this and I was going through it, but I'll just play Nigel Farage's position on it. Nigel Farage is not just like, you know, a commentator on this. You know, Nigel Farage almost single-handedly led the revolt against the EU and led the march to leave the EU and was pivotal in putting enough pressure on David Cameron's Conservative government to call for the referendum in the first place. And he's now back in politics after, because he thought after he had secured the vote of the referendum to leave, that that would be honoured. I thought it was pretty naive of him at the start when he thought it was going to happen, because I remember the time saying, we won't leave. And then he launched the Brexit Party, which is, you know, unequivocally committed to leaving the EU properly, and which has been used as a battering ram for the Conservatives, a bit like the ERG was to the Theresa May's government. Farage's position electorally and with the votes that he has and the power in that party is influential in all of this, because it may be required that that Boris Johnson in a general election would need, if we don't have a deal and there is an extension, they would need the Brexit Party's vote to prop up a majority in Parliament. As I say, I mean, if you're not confused, you don't understand. I mean, British politics has just got so confusing with this whole Brexit thing. I mean, as I say, it's fascinating, but here's Farage on the, I believe this was him talking on the Prime Minister's deal today.
Of course. As far as, do you think there is a particular problem with Labour and anti-Semitism?
Oh, no, he's talking about anti-Semitism. The great smear on Jeremy Corbyn. He's the only anti-Semite in this country. And so that's another thing, of course, that never gets talked about in this country, is the power of Jewish lobbying. That's another story. Everyone's terrified. You can be called a racist. You can be called a misogynist. Where, you know, the right has kind of, to some extent, pushed back on this sort of language and has learned to deal with it. But the Jew word now, if you're anti-Semitic, well, I mean, we can't go there. I mean, that really is the great taboo, isn't it? We're not allowed to talk about the Jews and their influence, and nobody does. Anyway, here's Farage talking about Johnson's Brexit deal today.
Big news out of Europe. The British, as in the UK, and Europeans, as in the European Union, they've agreed to a Brexit deal. It's a draft agreement. Got that? Nigel Farage is the leader of the Brexit Party, and he joins us now. Nigel, why are you saying that Parliament should reject this deal? Why?
It's not a new deal, Stuart. It's Mrs. May brought this new EU treaty, not a deal, but a treaty, back to us a year ago. Our Parliament quite rightly rejected it three times. What Boris has now done is to amend it, get some changes, to put lipstick on the pig. There are some things that are better about it, some things that are worse about it. And yes, I'd love us to be free, to have an all-encompassing trade deal with the USA, something the Trump administration are very, very keen on. Let me promise you, if what Boris is negotiating today goes through, it will be at least 2022 or 2023 before there's any trade deal with the USA. We will be trapped forever under this agreement.
Okay.
With environmental laws, with employment laws, even taxation is mentioned here. So it's Brexit in name only, Stuart.
Okay. If the deal is presented to Parliament, as it will be soon, and it is rejected by Parliament, then what happens?
Then we extend again. We've extended already, as you know. We were supposed to leave on March 29th. We're supposed to leave on Halloween. We would extend again. But I would rather extend than go for a bad new treaty that means we'll never be free. And into that extension, we might just get a general election where the British public can tell our political class what they really think about them.
Got it. All right, Nigel, thanks very much for joining us on a very important day. Always appreciated, Nigel. See you again soon.
Okay, so, Farage just said he would prefer an extension to like a bad deal. I don't know whether that was him talking before Jean-Claude Juncker had said he'd rule out extensions, or whether he, like myself, would deem that to carry very little weight in the final equation. I certainly don't see how Jean-Claude Juncker saying something would actually mean it to be the case. So I don't know whether that was before that, and he, like myself, has just ignored that as having any kind of credibility and any weight behind it, or whether that was or whether it was actually before he heard Jean-Claude Juncker. But I mean, it's just an impasse. So anyway, we're going to be left with this, an extension, it would seem, because I just don't see how this is going to get voted through, or it's going to be they'll either revoke Article 50, or we'll have a no deal. If there's an extension, then there'll be a general election, in which case Boris Johnson's going to need Farage's Brexit party to prop up a majority, and then he can maybe have a stronger position negotiating with the EU. I mean, every time you think that the options have dwindled a bit, they haven't. I mean, will there be a call for another referendum? Apparently, Juncker has said that he's ruling out extensions in any second referendums. Well, we'll see. I mean, I just still think that they could call for a second referendum. An extension is probably the most likely outcome. I'm trying to think if there's anyone I can think of, because this is all happening real time today, who might have some authority on this that I could play a clip, because I'm interested myself to try and find out who would be a good person to listen to in terms of commentary about this. But everybody's in the same position. It's just conjecture. We can only speculate as to what's still on the table and what's not on the table, and we're not going to know anything until a vote that deal is put through Parliament to know if it'll carry any weight, whether it'll pass through Parliament. If it does, that's the end of it. If it doesn't, then those of us who wanted to leave on a no deal might get our hopes up. If that is blocked and that's not a possibility, then the worst case scenario is a revoking of Article 50 or an extension, which would involve, probably Labour and the Lib Dems at least running on a second referendum. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, really. So let's see if there's anybody worth listening to who's got any authority on this. Unfortunately, all the guys who are kind of neutral, it's difficult to find neutral people who are really sort of who are going to shed any real light on it, because no one really knows, and anybody in government have got their own agendas. It's all rather draining, really, the whole Brexit thing, because it just goes on and on. And I was actually hoping to cover a different story, because I started covering a story a couple of weeks ago and I never got through because someone called in. And it was about it was from the Occidental Observer on the global homo thing. All our news over here has been dominated by it's Brexit, Brexit, and more Brexit, basically. There was some stories came out. What was this? There was a couple of stories came out a few weeks ago that I wanted to discuss. One of them was about the CPS reducing. Or the prosecutions against rape has dropped for the first time. It's dropped massively compared to last year or in recent years. The actual successful convictions against rape victims or against rapists, because the CPS decide what to pursue and what not to pursue. So there's a big drop there. And there was another story I meant to cover as well, which was actually affecting daily everybody's daily lives kind of thing. It was actually of direct relevance in terms of law and order of the country, which, because we've got a massive knife crime problems over here as well at the minute, in London particularly. Yeah, as I say, Brexit just sort of like sidetracks you from everything else, really. You have to be disciplined to focus on other stuff. And there was a couple of stories, as I say, that I really wanted to get up to speed with. Let me see if there's anything else that's worth talking about on Brexit that's broken since today. In the Telegraph, the deal has been done. Boris Johnson and the EU have achieved what many thought was impossible. The Telegraph will be reasonably right-wing only a few weeks ago and have come to a new agreement on Brexit. Is it in the bag? Certainly not. The DUP, the keystone in any pro-Brexit Commons majority, are still holding out. Whether they will come round will be of vital importance. You can keep on top of everything with regular updates from our excellent teams in Westminster, Brussels, Dublin and Belfast in our live blah, 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 blah. Now that an agreement has been reached, it will be time for Parliament to have its say, which will be on Saturday. The Commons is expected to sit on Saturday to vote on the deal, which could be agonisingly tight. The DUP, who carry much more weight than their 10 seats would imply, will be vital. James Rothwell explains from Belfast what it is the party objects to and why. However, with his majority long gone, Mr. Johnson will need the support not only of the DUP, but of many of the former colleagues he expelled from the party, as another issue I should have mentioned, and perhaps a dozen or more Labour MPs. I just don't see how this is possible. Patrick Scott takes you through how it all stacks up. Alongside the DUP, the Brexiteers and the Tory backbenchers will be a crucial faction. Those MPs may face a deeply unappetizing choice. They may find plenty to dislike in the New Deal, but as Alistair Heath argues in his column, this could well be their final chance to secure a genuine Brexit. So, again, just a Telegraph outlining the difficulties there, particularly focusing on the DUP. Can Mr. Johnson get this deal through Parliament without the support of the DUP, which would be interesting to see if that was possible. See if this article can shed any light on that. Johnson's hopes of getting his Brexit deal through Parliament have been dealt a blow by the DUP's insistence that they can't support his proposals as they currently stand. So immediately, I mean, the DUP is really important. You know, they really prop up the government, and they have, you know, they are an important ally with the Conservatives. And if they're not voting for this, this is problematical for the government. However, due to the more positive mood music emanating from other parliamentary factions, the Prime Minister might not necessarily need the 10 DUP MP support. And the introduction of the Benn Act means that Johnson's best hope of fulfilling his promise to leave the EU by the end of October rests on passing a deal. Although, as I say, it's possible that if the EU genuinely have ruled out an extension, then the Benn Act, which stops a no deal, I can't see how that applies, because the idea of that is to stop a no deal Brexit and then you can have an extension. And if the EU are ruling out an extension, then Article 50 surely takes precedent over the Benn Act, which says that we leave in the 31st with or without a deal if we can't get a deal. So that's complicated as well. Anyway, all eyes will be on the British Parliament on Saturday. So we've literally only got tomorrow to actually digest what that deal that Johnson has proposed and agreed with the EU, what it actually means. E. Michael Jones on Culture Wars. Listen to Dr. Jones. I've interviewed Mike quite a few times. He's got a little email. Over the past few months, the landscape of the internet has changed drastically, especially on YouTube. I've had about half a dozen videos deleted. On top of deleting thousands of videos and content creators, the algorithms being implemented by social media companies are now designed to steer curious minds away from alternative viewpoints and send them back towards the mainstream. 6 months ago, YouTube might have recommended videos from people like Dr. E. Michael Jones, but today recommends things like Sean Hannity, 60 Minutes, Fox News, or PragerU. The oligarchs, the media, and the international establishment are terrified that you might wake up, and they're terrified that you might talk about the Jews. The same ruling elite know that Dr. Jones is one of the leading voices in this fight and are doing all they can to suppress his Catholic perspective on the modern world. This is why we have been working overtime to make his wisdom and research available to you on platforms that make it easy for you to hear and share the truth with others. So they're announcing here, every video that was on Dr. Jones' YouTube channel is now available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Podcasts. Subscribe below and don't miss it, which is cool because I've done about half a dozen interviews with Mike Jones. And I have to say, before he became like really, really popular on YouTube, I had been interviewing him way back at the start of my show in 2016. So let's try and get E. Michael Jones here live on revisionmedia.org next Thursday. I will email him in the meantime and see if I can get him on for next Thursday for an update there on what's happening with all things E. Michael Jones. So I'll send him an email tomorrow and see if I can organize that and get him on. I'm going to wrap up now. Apologies that I haven't covered anything, but today has been, on the surface of it anyway, it's been an important day in British politics with the Johnson agreeing a deal with the EU. But as I say, it doesn't look like it's going to change anything. I mean, it just looks like it's going to be a continuation of an impasse, really. I don't see at this stage, on the surface of it, how it's going to be any different from how Theresa May's deal played out, which was basically voted down in Parliament on three separate occasions. But you never know. People are sick and tired of it now, and they realise that there's other things that the country needs to get on with and focus on. So maybe they'll pull something out of the hat here. Who knows what goes on behind closed doors and with those within the political elites. Maybe they'll get it through, and that'll be that. So I'll wrap it up there, folks. I'll be back again next Thursday, same time, at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. And if you want to donate, do so to revisionmedia.org. We're 100% listener supported, and that's appreciated. If you could just go to revisionmedia.org, and I'm sure there's a donate page there. If you want to donate to the work I do, you can do that on PayPal at Stevenson_P5 at
Hi.
Donald, Gary DeMar talking about, Zionism and from a Christian point of view, biblically, as to whether there's any truth to these end times prophecies, etc., and debunking a lot of that. So there's some cool stuff up there. That's just in Paul Stevens. Until then, I'll be back again next Thursday. So until then, have a great week.